welcome, sir, and I believe that the Honorable Mr. Neal will conduct your hearing at this time, so if you just hang on, sir.
You're the only one?
No, I said the person who will be chairing your hearing at this time will be the Honorable Mr. David Neal. So if you just hang on to the phone, sir, and he will give the instructions. So the next one you will hear will be that of Mr. Neal, the Honorable Mr. Neal.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Can you hear me okay, sir? Sir, Mr. Green?
Yes.
Can you hear me okay?
Can you hear Mr. Neal, sir?
Can I speak again, please?
Okay, I'm just asking if you can hear me okay.
I can barely hear him.
Okay, I'll try and speak up, is that any better? Sir?
Yes.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes, I'm barely hearing you, yes, sir.
Okay, is it any better now? I moved the microphone, so maybe you can hear me better?
I can hear you, I'm not making out the words perfectly, though.
Okay, so let's see what, if we can continue this without any problems. If you don't understand something, please let me know and I can repeat it for you, okay?
Yes, sir.
Okay, before you start, I want to ask, I believe your sister's here in the audience. Do you wish to speak on behalf of this? Okay, thank you. I'm just calling for Joseph F. Green, ABC number 59118. Mr. Green is 53 years old and serving a life sentence for kidnapping, plus he has a consecutive life sentence for aggravated assault. Before I continue, sir, I'm going to introduce the gentleman you can't see them, but I'll still introduce them. We have the Honorable Michael Johnson, the Honorable Dr. C.T. Wright, who's a board chairman, the Honorable Lou Thomas, and the Honorable Gail Newhouse. And my name is David Neal, and I'll be the panel chair today. So I'm going to ask for some information, sir. If it was incorrect, please let me know. And so if I stop and ask if what I have given already is correct. Okay, I think you're on life sentence for kidnapping, and you have a consecutive life sentence for aggravated assault. The hearing today is for after the discharge or the government has an executive sentence, which would be too long of the life sentence. You've already served two concurrent 21-year sentences for sexual assault. And you've been incarcerated for 32 years, I believe, on this. You became parole eligible on April 3rd, 2017, and you were certified for this hearing on November 8, 2017. And my certification is for a parole executive sentence after discharge. Mr. Green was granted parole as a consecutive sentence to the sentence he's on now on April 13, 1988. And he appeared before the board three other times. Mr. Green has been in the programming. He has moderate discipline with mostly drug and disobeying type offenses. He also had an escape in 1998. He has some very extensive criminal history dating back to 1979 as a juvenile, which charges ranging from petty theft to aggravated robbery, probation violations, kidnapping, and sexual assault. The allegation of child arrest of a 12-year-old girl, but those charges were viewed as a hate prosecution for this offense. That sound pretty much correct so far, sir? Mr. Green?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, does Brian's statement so far sound correct to you?
Yes, I'm here. You may mention that this is a parole hearing to a consecutive sentence?
Yes, sir.
Okay, because when I was here 16 months ago, they told me something a little different. I just didn't know that I was still standing. my hearing was a parole absolute release hearing that I was going to?
Well, the parole was to consecutive sentence or absolute discharge. There were two choices we're looking at today.
Okay.
Okay, so the information I gave was correct at that point, right, sir?
I didn't get that last part.
Okay. And then you say it's so far, is it as far as you can let you tell, correct?
I'm sound correct, yes, sir.
Okay. This offense occurred on December 31st, 1985 in Mesa.
That's correct.
This green section was assaulted the victim and was initially charged and convicted. Victim had just a matter of an establishment and an exemption and an ambulance and approached and they were brought to her to the city where the community aggravated assault and sexual assault. And at the time of this brief arrest, he stated that he had been drinking heavily and did not remember committing the offense. But after the charges were brought, Mr. Green stated he did not believe he committed the crime and that the charges were illegally brought against him originally. So, sir, that sound pretty close on to the basic information there.
I didn't hear the last part.
Okay, it was what I stated about the offense. It's very basic, but does it sound correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and do you know, think the charges were illegally brought against you, or do you feel that she didn't commit the offense?
I didn't hear that last part again. You're asking me about the crime?
Okay, yes, sir. I'm not sure exactly why we're having problems, and I know that the phone board, we generally have some issues. I can't read the city now, so as I said, if you don't understand something, let me know. I'm not asking you to, the information we have is that once the charges were brought against you, you said that you feel that you could have committed an offense and that the charges were illegally brought against you. Okay, do you understand that?
Yes, I understand that, yes, I
committed the crime. Do you still feel that the charges were brought against you illegally, or are you taking responsibility for the offense?
Can I talk, sir?
Yes, that's why I'm asking the question, sir.
Okay, I took a responsibility for this crime from the day of my arrest. That has never even been issue, because I gave a clean confession to this crime. I didn't try to take this crime to trial. I didn't try to walk away or shy away from my responsibilities. I took responsibility. I stood up as a man. And as soon as I committed this crime, I put it on paper to each element of the crime. You know, not to get a lesser sentence, but because I knew it was the right thing to do. I didn't try to hold back and say, I didn't do it. I might be coming to you today to say, later on down the line, hey, you know, I committed this crime, I'm just trying to help me, move to another sentence or get free or release. I came forward in the very beginning, you know.
Okay, that was, we are given a packet of information, and that's all we have to go on, and that's why we give everybody an opportunity to tell us what's going on. And this one, the information was specific that you changed your, first you said you couldn't remember anything, and you said that, there's already, which is not unusual scenario as charges are brought against somebody. So, you already answered my question, and that is that you did take full responsibility for the offense, which is,
it's so hard for me to hear. As you're asking me about the crime, I'm just wanting to make sure you understand that. I'm taking responsibility, or trying to. I took responsibility for this crime.
Well, that's why we have this discussion, sir. So you can understand, I've never heard any of you, if you've been, the previous time, I've worked on a board, so I'm not going to is known, and that's part of the issue. We get the information as we go on. And it's not always complete, and it's not always exactly what happened, but you've answered that question.
Okay, you said that,
Yeah, you said, I mean, I need a basic, very basic.
Can you state the part of the packet that you have?
I think the communication problem is causing us to know. It is a very, very basic summary of the offering, and I'm not sure whether you can accept the responsibility or not, and you explain that to us, and so now we know that you accept the responsibility for the offense. So let's just move on with this. All four charges received life sentences, but on appeal, the two sexual assault sentences were overturned, and the trial court resentenced them to 21 years each to one of them currently to one. That's correct, sir?
Yes, sir.
Okay. We do have an opposition letter from the county attorney, and the next consecutive sentence, unless we should go on action.
Excuse me? Just for your knowledge, I didn't even hear that last part.
I heard the county attorney's part.
That's what I said, what I'm hearing.
But when I know I heard what you said,
I say yes behind it.
I didn't hear that part.
So could you please repeat it?
Mr. Neal, just 1 second. Just for the technical reasons. Mr. Green, can you hear me clearly?
Yes, I can.
Can you hear me very clearly?
I hear you right now, yes, sir.
Do you want to switch positions right now with the microphone? Because I don't know if...
The microphone.
Yes, I was wondering.
It's the trouble.
Sir, can you hear me better now? Can you hear me any better, sir?
Yes, I can.
Okay. Let's try to play this... And if it doesn't get any better, we'll move on to another one. Okay?
Okay, I appreciate that.
Okay, well, it can be a real problem. Now, the last thing I said was the release plan is to move to the next consecutive sentence.
Yes.
Okay, so now, since most of our, you know, all that was correct as you stated, and we got a few questions that way. Like I said, I have never met you before, and so this is your time to kind of explain to the board, especially to those of us that have never heard one of your or had one of your hearings, a little bit about what was going on in your life and time frame and how you have changed since you've been incarcerated.
Yes, sir.
And those kind of things. And what you've done to accomplish, moving forward in life. Okay. So it's your turn.
Okay. To the honorable judge there and people listening. Yes, I came forward at the very beginning on this crime. It happened on New Year's Eve. I was a 21-year-old kid. Lucky for my fault, I was smart enough to not drive that night. It's not something that later on down the line, I try to say, hey, I'm going to try to commit, say that I'm guilty of this, just so I can get a lesser sentence, or just because I wanted some type of release. It wasn't that. I came for it. My family taught me as a kid, as a young man, if you make a mistake or you make something wrong, you own up to that. I didn't try to go to keep my mouth shut and let my lawyer try to get me out of jail and see if I can get a lesser sentence. That didn't even compute into my mind. My mind is, at the end of this tape that I've made a confession of, my mind was, and I made the statement that my whole thing was raised for the victim. So I didn't want the victim to think that there was going to be another attack, coming from me. Because I'm not no kind of rapist or serial rapist. So I know for the rest of my life, I'm going to be labeled that because of the crime that I committed. But that doesn't define who I am as a man, and I try not to let it define who I am as a man. What I've done in incarceration and been in incarceration, because it's been over 10,000 days for me, is I try to do a lot to better myself. I don't get a break. I don't be in prison for 8 hours and go home for 16 or in prison for 16 to go home. I'm here for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. So there times do arise because of that. There's things that I've had in disciplinary. It's kind of like getting a speeding ticket. You run into personalities that aren't the same as yours, and maybe you guys have an argument. I understand they're always right, but sometimes I'm not in the wrong, and I end up accepting the punishment for being in the wrong to make it go away. So my disciplinary record isn't the greatest. I haven't touched a drug or even smoked a cigarette in 21 years. I walk around with guys who are younger than them at the time, like 18, 19 years old. When it comes to and why I even think I in any way deserve to get some kind of leniency or something from this court, it's difficult to explain, but I like the fact that I'm in front of honorable judges who actually understand sentencing codes and sentencing guidelines of today and of the past. And I was given consecutive sentences, sure. I was given consecutive sentences. I was given four immediately from the very beginning because my sentencing guidelines at the time for the crimes that I had committed was a 5-year minimum, 7.5-year presumptive, and 11-year max. But because I was on probation, I was committed a dangerous crime, which is something I didn't try to go to trial for. I threw myself on the mercy of the court because I was wrong. And if I repeat that over and over again, it's because it's the truth and it's something I'm not trying to duck and dodge out from underneath. But because of that admission and because of me giving myself to the mercy of the court, the prosecution pushed for the maximum sentence on me. And the maximum sentence under the code 13604.02a was 25 to life. And I knew I was getting 25 to life. And somehow, the prosecution, I had a public defender or something, and instead of pleading that as a mitigating factor of my sins that I'm trying to do the right thing, it never got put in there. And so the prosecution, before the judge, asked him to extend that. He went outside my case, even though I had no weapon, I had no multiple victims, I had no gun. He went outside my case and brought in a case, State versus Gordon, which could maybe give the judge an opportunity to give me consecutive sentences. And they sent that up to the state to find out whether or not the legislator or them intent was to allow that to stand. And so I was given multiple life sentences. I've been here for a straight 28 years. At the time of 32 years old, I was released from prison in 1988, as you guys explained to me in the beginning of the sentences. And I successfully completed parole at that period of time. The last time I spoke with the last board that had heard me, they mentioned that I was an expounder and I was somebody that wasn't allowed to be trusted. And that wasn't the truth. The first expounding was because I went to Minnesota to be there as a father for my son who was coming to judge. I didn't want him coming to without having my name. And I was wrong for that and I came back and I was given a 5-year sentence for probation violation for that. Like I said, after 2.5 years I got out and I successfully completed parole, but they just went back to the fact that I expounded. So it's not like I couldn't be trusted or I couldn't go back out to the street. The last time I came before the board, they asked me for why could I be trusted a lot of work that I've done to go in the streets, and they asked me for family involvement to be a part of this, because they said that, yeah, what you've done and what you said is sound good, but we want to know what changes that you made. And so I asked them if they had got my packet, and I hope you guys have got my packet, because I sent it to you earlier. And I showed you all the programs that I have went through, from alcohol abuse to domestic violence to self-awareness the list goes on, to living free, to field camp reading, and, you know, I've just been programming. And they didn't have it at that time. They were asking me to continue the program, so I told them, I said, I've gotten so far in here because I'm a lifeguard. I can't go to any type of pre-release programs to be able to set up to say I'm ready to go home, or, you know, so I started programming on my own, and they were asking me to show them how I program on my own, and I told them I started learning how currency your triggers. I started learning how to stocks and bonds, because I'm getting too old. I'm in my 50s now. I'm not 21 years old, I'm in my 50s. So to be able to dig a fork in the ground and try to make my living by that way is a little harder, you know, because, you know, I feel like I have problems and so forth and so on. But in the packet that I sent, I have a job. I don't know if you guys have that packet before you, but I wanted to show the board. I have a place to stay with my mother. I have a job at Progressive Services. If I get released, he said they would definitely hire me. Another reason why I filed was because for some reason I had this paperwork from Middle Ground which explaining that out of inspector was June 1st, 2017, that the clemency board was looking for people who actually had multiple sentences, 25 years or more, to add up to 50 years, due to the fact that they had one victim and one case member. And I set them criteria, and I was like, a lot of people come to me and say, you know, I see a lot of guys get out, I see a lot of guys get a second opportunity, yet you don't have that opportunity. And when we discuss and talk, and they say, well, if you came forward in the beginning of your sentence the way you said you did, and you gave a take confession to that crime, and you try to do the right thing, why are they punishing you worse than they punish everybody else? And I keep trying to explain that to my family and everybody else, hey, I can only do the best by what I can do, and I can try to be prepared for the streets. But I know I have two ways to go, one to Boot Hill, which is the death cemetery out here, or two to get another opportunity, and I'm going to fight for the second opportunity, because I think as a man, I've grown a lot. I've become a stronger person. And I talked to my sister who was there, and you say is in the room today with you, and she said about personal life things from time to time, and I shouldn't do that, I should stay on the facts and on the point. But I'll try to explain to her what I read my personal life is like. In 2010, my wife died of cancer. If there was something in my life that would have thrown me a loop or taken me to a direction that shows that I'm lesser or beastly type of individual or something that can't be trusted, that would have been it. But instead, I learned to cope through that. I learned to move forward on my own with my own strength to understand that life is a part of death. And we deal with it in that fashion. So if there was something that would have thrown me about, or something that would have made me not be as strong as I am, that would have been it. There's nothing that can happen to me out there on the streets, or nothing that could go on in my life that could throw me for a loop, but that didn't. And so that showed me myself that I've been given opportunities and ready for society. Like I said, they asked me for family involvement, and at that time I told them I didn't want to put my family involvement because I committed this crime on my own, I've been doing this sentence on my own, and I don't want to drag my family through another emotional way. I just can't see myself doing that because I've actually not had a lot of visits and not let my family be involved in my life because I see the pain and torture that they go through. Like I said, my wife died. It threw my kids to a tailspin because I have three kids. They're in their 30s now. But it threw my kids into a tailspin. And to give them hope of saying, I have an opportunity to come back in the streets is painful and hurtful to them. And I knew that. And I didn't want to do that, but they asked me to. Now, my sister's here today. And like I said, once again, she's hearing me. I thank her for showing up because she really believes that I have an opportunity. She can speak for what my family members carved out more than me. You know, I do come from a good family, and, you know, so you can get an opportunity to go back to the streets, you're not putting me in the position that I'm going back into a negative environment of society. I have two brothers and three sisters, and all of them could have graduated from a major college or been to a major college. Me, myself, I'm the only person in my family who has actually been fractured by the law, who has committed a crime, you know, and I stood up for that. But bottom line is that that's the kind of family that I have. My father's military, he's ex-military, he's a recruiter. My oldest brother and sister both have been in the military, both were 82nd Airborne Division. So if given the opportunity to release, I do have a strong family support system. They may not be all there today, and I understand that, because one thing I don't do is try to involve them too much in my life. But it's not like with being given the opportunity at release that I'm going into a negative environment. You know, I actually do have the loved ones out there, and they're all alive still today. I mean, I lost my grandmother, grandfather, a few aunties, and this and that to cancer, but like I said, death is a part of life. But I don't have a negative situation out there in the street. I appreciate the fact you allow me to speak and to state my point of view, and I hope I've touched upon enough areas that to give you questions to ask me, but I don't want to pick up all of your time. The reason I spoke was like I spoke, this is life or death for me. You know, it's I don't, going from one 25-year sentence to another 25-year sentence is basically a death sentence, and I recognize that. I'm not fooling myself into thinking that, you know, that's not the truth. I've done 28 years on this. My number is, like you said, 59-100-118. I do paperwork every day on inmates because it's part of my job, and I've seen numbers close to mine in the 300,000 extra inmates coming in behind me, you know, and it's not a good feeling. You know, it's a different mentality and a different sphere in life to know you were sentenced to die in prison or knowing you were going to get out in 15 years. And so I carry myself in a different mannerism. You know, people come to me, I'm Mr. Green or, you know, Sir Green or, you know, the older guy in the group, and they treat me with respect and I treat them with respect. So during these years, whatever knowledge I've given them or whatever ways that they receive and got from me, it shows in my care. I mean, you guys don't get to meet me or see me every day. The only time you hear me is now. And the things that are before you are negative because it's what gets put into paperwork. It's hard as an individual to try to document for you during your years all the positive things that should get done. I know it sounds good, but it's just hard to get documented that. Because in life, I learned that just because you do something good, you give guys who don't have it soap, or you give guys advice, or you try to find things out to help better them. That means you don't run around telling everybody the things you do, and they don't get documented. But that's the nature of who I am, and that's how I treat life, and how I treat myself. You know, I don't...
Sir?
Yes.
Can you
hear me? Yes, I can.
Yeah, we need to move forward with this, and we appreciate the information, and we can read your hand, and we will allow you to get the information, but that would more of a summation. I'd like to see if any of my board members have any questions at this time.
Okay, I appreciate it. Thank you for the time to give me to chip in.
Okay, Mr. Jones?
Yes, thank you. Can you hear me, Mr. Green?
Yes, I can.
Just a quick question, and again, thank you for providing such a detailed statement. The question I have is that you had 14 major tickets up until around 2012, and now it's getting close to 6 years that you've had very low discipline in the ADC. So what changed? What changed on you?
Okay,
and I'll ask you to keep it short because
if you have my reports before you, before 2010, if you go back before that, you said 14 disciplinary tickets. If you go back, there's a 10-year time period in between those two times that I had no tickets whatsoever. So those 14 tickets that were prior to 2010 were 10 years ahead of that time. Because I had none until my wife died, and I took tickets to go to the hole because they didn't put me in the hole so I could sit by myself and go through the emotional drama. That's why I took the tickets at that time. But between that time and 10 years prior, I had no tickets if you had that report before you.
Well, Well, I'm not really going after the tickets per se as much as it seems that there was a positive change after 2012. So, did you turn a corner in your life after 2012?
Once I regained myself again, I'm just older, I'm tired of any kind of, I don't let nothing bother me. It's not like I don't stand up for myself, it's just that I just don't let anything bother me anymore. It's too time consuming to just argue with people for something that you're not trying to do in court.
Thank you, Mr. Green. Thank you, Mr. Neal.
You're doing a question for the board. I'm going to have your sister come up and speak on your behalf of this time, sir.
Okay.
Would you state your name for the record, please?
My name is Elizabeth Green, and I'm Joseph's assistant, main sister, pretty much. Jan. And we are from a big family. We're army rats. We do know right from wrong. I cannot stand what alcohol does to anybody. I've seen it too many times. But I do want to mention this. I don't know much about court stuff. I have read a lot of things. I've read people being charged with murder getting 7 and 10 years. I've only had one crime. That one crime was charged 4 different times and gave me 4 separate life sentences. One crime. I don't ever want to pull a race car. But there is only deep back on this one. And him being committed to the next sentence is just that much closer to him seeing reality. Which it should be for him. What he did was bad. What he felt was the remorse that he went and he owned up to that my mother taught all of us to do. And his payment for that was, instead of them trying to look at the fact that he is a one-timer, they decided, well, we're just going to go ahead and put you away until we don't see the light of day. And I believe that's what his parole officer told him. You embarrassed me, and I'm going to make sure you pay. That has nothing to do with the fact that we're here now, because this could be an opening to showing and seeing. As you can see, my brother's intelligent. My brother is wise. He actually helps some of the guys in there to learn and think a different way, only because, you know, what else is there to do when you're in there besides after you've bettered yourself? You can only do something better with people around you so that your world is better too, and hopefully they never come back. He's watched people come, and he's watched people come back, unfortunately. And yet he's still sitting here with all the wisdom and the knowledge and how to make it proper and make it right in his life, and he just hasn't had the opportunity. I feel and I pray that he has, you know, that opportunity. I've watched him go through a lot of things. I've watched the society change. And I still see people, even here in what we've just experienced and waiting for his trial to come up, people have done pretty awful crimes that got pretty low time. And, you know, and my brother did one thing at 21 years old that literally took him out of life forever. Forget remorse, it took him out of life forever. And I understand, I realize, I recognize that time can be a healer, but time can also be a destructor too. Like you say, you know, he did great after, you know, 2012. And everything he did was, you know, for the love of his life. He left Arizona and took that, you know, leaving probation for the love of his life. At 19 years old, he came back and called and said, I'm back, can I get some time? For the love of his life, I got my kids now. You know, he did the time for the crime for when they let him go, and it wasn't absconding justice. He actually was released with quote-unquote prejudice. That prejudice required a knock on the door to change everything from the, and he was building that was good, proper, and right. Children that were growing up and knew what the father was, to the children that don't really know who my brother is because he's been in there since they were 6, 8, and 12, and they're in their 30s. I helped raise some of them when their mother got ill, until their adulthood. So all of us in the family, we are here, we stand for him, we support him, we believe in him. I don't think one really bad night should make 10,000 plus days of the rest of your life bad. And I truly pray that you guys look at that, and I thank you for giving us the opportunity to be here and to potentially move him either absolutely to the next sentence. And I ask a question, if you do, and I pray that you do allow him to move to the next sentence or absolute, what happens to the sentence after that? When does he come for absolute for that? Because all of it is the same one way, the same one time. That he's paid for 25 life sentences, judging so forth. Thank you very much for allowing me to speak.
Any questions from the board? Thank you, ma'am.
You're welcome.
Okay, Mr. Green? Mr. Green?
Yes.
Okay, sorry about that. My microphone, my voice seems a little better. Are you giving us a pretty good summation of your position on this? So, your sister got given a very nice statement you have. So, we're going to move into the discussion and make a determination on this. We'll be talking about this, so we just ask that you stay on phone, be able to listen to the discussion, and then we have to say, but remain silent while we're talking, okay?
Yes, sir.
All right, thank you. The board is now in discussion. I realize what your sister was saying about one crime, but the sentencing was all based on four different aspects of the crime. So that's the four different terms. Listening to him, and speak, not only what he has to say about himself and moving forward and everything, but the tone of which the manner of presentation all impressed me. I think Mr. Green has spent a considerable amount of time in jail. He seems to be very remorseful for the year, and although he can't take it back, I'm sure he would if he could. I'm inclined to Mr. Green approach his next and second sentence. He still has quite a considerable amount of time at that point in time, but if I could possibly give him some hope to continue and pack for now, then we have to give it. Problems in prison. But I'd like to hear a discussion from the rest of my board members if they have anything they'd like to tell me. Ms. Woodhouse.
Mr. Neal, thank you. I'm going to start by just saying that I agree with you because from the moment Mr. Green started to speak, I immediately thought he is a man of integrity and is a person who was raised correctly, has a good family support, has good potential. But I do want to speak, and I want this on the record, for the person who's not here, and that's the victim. And that woman is now permanently disfigured from the blows to her face. She incurred $3,000 worth of plastic surgery, and when she was asked if she wanted restitution for that, she said no, because that would require I give my address to anyone, even the courts. She would not. She's moved out of state. She's terrified of the victim, of the perpetrator, and her marriage has failed because of the rape. Her husband was not able to deal with that rape. So for the victim who is not here today, I just want to make sure that's on the record. Because she does deserve to be, her voice does deserve to be heard. But based on the totality of things, with Mr. Green's impending another life sentence, however we got to that, because of his demeanor and his obvious manner to today and the changes, what the word is in his head, I agree with you. I think he does deserve to be pulled his next sentence.
Thank you. Mr. Thomas?
Thank you, Mr. Neal. I agree with both of my colleagues, and I'm not going to repeat what Ms. Rittenhouse said about the victim. I think there was some a very strong statement, because I do have that concern. But also looking at the totality of this case, we do look to the rehabilitation of people in the correction system, and personally, as one voting board member, I think that he's arrived at a place where we can safely consider parole to the next consecutive sentence. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Johnson?
I agree, and I'm supportive of him going to his next consecutive sentence. I agree with what my colleagues have stated. I do want to note that unless I've been reading this wrong, that this next consecutive sentence is his final sentence. That he would actually be serving. I did hear some comment that maybe perhaps he was going to go to some other sentence after that, but this is his final sentence. It would be his final sentence.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Dr. Wright?
Yes, sir. I agree with my colleagues. I think that he's made progress, and we wish him the best as he comes to his final sentence, and we wish him the best, and that he will continue to be a positive influence wherever he is. Thank you.
Thank you. I do agree on mentioning the victim. I do consider the victim, and that's part of why the sentencing is why he was, because of the injuries and trauma to the victim. But I agree that I think it's time for Mr. Green to move on to his last sentence, work with it, and when he's out in the floor, hopefully everything will be good, and move on from there. So I'm going to move to grant Mr. Green, ADC number 59198, parole to his next Kentucky sentence, and deny him absolute discharge.
Agreed. For not home arrest, that should not be included in the motion. Oh, that's right. Not home arrest. Welcome.
So, Mr. Green, can you hear the decision of the board?
Yes.
Okay, so, you know, to be the paperwork true, which you will need to move to your next consecutive sentence. And we do hope that you can move forward, and when you're eligible for the parole, we'll see you again, or the board will see you again. And quite hopefully at that time, you'll be eligible for home arrest and be able to move on with life outside of DLC. So we wish you the best luck. Please move forward with a positive attitude, and thank you, Mr. Green, for speaking on behalf